This is Friday, November 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, another terrorist attack, this one at a luxury hotel in the African nation of Mali. We'll have the latest for you. U.S. lawmakers vote to severely limit and screen Syrian migrants looking to come to the U.S. We'll talk about that and its political implications with VOA's national correspondent Jim Malone. And we'll join Bill Zeeble in Dallas, where choreographer, dancer Twyla Tharp is celebrating her 50th anniversary in the world of dance by debuting some new works. All that coming your way. The latest we have from Bamako, Mali, is that at least 27 people, at least according to the Reuters news agency, 27 people are reported dead after Malian commandos stormed a luxury hotel in the capital, Bamako, with at least 170 people inside, many of them foreigners, that had been seized by Islamic gunmen. The former French colony has been battling Islamist rebels for several years now, and the jihadist group Al-Morabitoun, allied to Al-Qaeda and based in the deserts of northern Mali, has claimed responsibility for the attack in a tweet. By late afternoon, ministerial advisors of the government told the French television station BFM-TV that no more hostages were being held. However, a UN official said UN peacekeepers on the scene had seen 27 bodies and a preliminary count, and that a search of the hotel was continuing. It was not clear whether any of the gunmen, who are said to have dug in on the seventh floor of the hotel as special forces advanced on them, were still active. We will keep an eye on everything that is happening as far as that story is concerned and keep you up to date on to what is happening there. There are some developments in France as well, where French Prime Minister Manuel Valls says one more person has died as the result of last week's attacks in Paris, raising the total there to 130. Valls made the announcement Friday in a speech to the Senate, which is expected to approve a three-month extension to France's state of emergency. Hundreds also were wounded by the attackers, many of them severely. Val said to those who asked, "What can I do? I say to resist is to keep on living, to go out." Count does not include any of the attackers who died. Andrew Palcheski is joining us now. He has been keeping his eye on social media. Andrew, how much and really how much action, interaction is there as far as this Mali story is concerned, and the French story for that matter?
Well, there's a lot of questions about both, and it's interesting that you mentioned the Paris attacks, because it's actually playing into a lot of what people are talking about this Mali attack. A lot of people noted after the Paris attack on social media, they said the media was not covering attacks in non-Western countries as much as they did this Paris attack, citing an attack in Beirut the day before the Paris attack where about 43 people were killed in a series of suicide bombings. So a lot of people are saying this Mali attack being covered so widely in the media, in Western media, is a sign that they've heard the message from the Paris attacks that you need to cover all terrorism around the world. So a lot of people are citing that on social media, saying that this is a change and one that they're, you don't want to say glad to see, because you certainly don't want to see coverage of a terrorist attack, but they are heartened by the fact that you're seeing more coverage of terror attacks outside of the West.
One thing that is palpable from many people I've talked to across this country and some overseas, and that there is an elevated sense of fear with all these attacks and all these threats, basically the threats along with the attacks. Is that coming up as well?
Absolutely. A lot of people asking just a simple question, why terror? Why is this happening again in another country, another attack, another shooting? So there's a lot of fear. People internalizing it, as they often do in social media, to their own cases, saying, well, I don't know if I want to go out this weekend. I don't know if I, you know, want to go to a restaurant or a cafe. Will I feel safe? That's a question that a lot of people are asking as well. Of course, Paris, in the minds of many people, it was kind of these safe places, restaurants, places where people go out and don't expect anything like this to ever happen. And now in Mali, this is a hotel. It's surely people on vacation, tourists, maybe families. So people certainly concerned about that, wondering what is next among these targets?
Jeff Selden, VOA's national security correspondent, is with us in the studio, and he'll join us in just a moment or so. But this can't be the only thing that's being tweeted about and talked about on social media. There's got to be something with music. There's got to be something. What else is going on?
There is, and it's, you know, on a day of very heavy news and a week of very heavy news, there's some brightness at the end of the week with Adele releasing her long-awaited album 25 after 4 years. So hashtag Adele25 is trending, on pace potentially to become the largest selling album for 1 week, for the first week ever. Appropriately is projected to sell 2.5 million copies digitally and through CDs.
And she wants all the money from that, too.
Yes, and people are noting that on social media, saying she's getting quite a payday. But what a lot of people are doing on social media is they're tweeting out GIFs of people crying. They said, oh, it's going to make me, you know, so emotional to hear this music. Somebody tweeted out a picture I really liked of the album on sale at a store next to Kleenex tissues being sold. So they said it's a great package deal that you can buy. And on iTunes here in the U.S., this is something else that people are pointing out on social media, all 11 tracks from the CD are in the top 40 on iTunes. In fact, she holds number 1, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11, 13, 16, and 20. So 9 of the 11 are in the top 20. So a lot of people talking about that, a lot of buzz. As I was looking at it on Twitter, I was reading what people were tweeting out with the hashtag, and within an instant, there was, you know, hundreds of new tweets that popped up, literally hundreds of tweets a second that are coming out about this album.
She's almost rivaling your popularity. You know, it's amazing.
Almost. And now, if I can rival her money, then I'll be set.
Got it. Andrew Palczewski is our media guru and social media guru. This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. Jeff Selden, as I said, VOA's national security correspondent, is in the studio with us. Jeff, with another terrorist attack today, and after the whole Adele story, we are transitioning back to very serious stuff that's happening. The question is, after these terrorist attacks, is how do you respond? And that's uppermost in many minds. What are the chief concerns when facing a terrorist threat?
Well, the chief concerns are that you can be right in terms of spoiling a terrorist plot 99 times, but that one time out of 100 that you're not, it can be very deadly, and the results, like in Paris, devastating to that country and to many of the French allies around the world. So officials, intelligence officials, look at a couple of things. First of all, what did they possibly miss the first time around that they could get this time around that would have tipped them off that they might have been able to do better? The other thing they look at are what are the threats, where are they coming from? And in this situation, the concerns about Europe and the concerns about the U.S. are slightly different. Europe is on the front lines of this wave of refugees coming from Syria especially, and so there's a lot of concern that the Islamic State terror group in particular is going to try to sneak in foreign fighters into Europe through these refugees. The U.S., it's a little bit further away. They're worried about it too, but they say most likely the U.S., what they're worried about are more of the copycat attacks or people who have been radicalized online, haven't been to the front in Syria, but may try to act in the name of the Islamic State.
Jeff, let me bring into our conversation Katerina Hoija. She is in Bamako, and she is covering the hotel attack, and we appreciate you being with us, Katerina. What is the latest, and what do you see happening there?
Well, I think we just seen the end of the military operations at the hotel Radisson here in Bamako. At the moment, French and Malian forces are still inside the hotel. We do hear occasional explosions and gunfire, but it seems like they are going through the hotel to make sure there are no attackers left inside. We've also seen hostages leave the hotel. I just spoke to a French citizen who had been in his room this morning when he saw on the TV news that there was an attack on a Bamako hotel, and it happened to be the hotel that he was in. Now, he is one of those who managed to escape safely with the help of Malian and international forces. We also have confirmed at least 21 people killed in the attack, probably more. There are now retrieving bodies from the building that is still full of military, foreign, and Malian forces.
And the attackers remain in the hotel, is that correct?
We have confirmed two of the attackers were killed. We have no information about the rest of them. It's still not clear how many attackers there actually were. I spoke to a security guard this morning who was injured when the attackers entered the hotel and opened fire. And he said he saw about four or five gunmen before he was shot.
Well, and there has been a group that has claimed responsibility for this. Is that correct?
That is still not clear yet. We have heard, I mean, there are several terrorist networks or armed groups present in Mali, and they have moved their operations further south and into the center of Mali. These are groups that are usually operating in the north. Early this year, we saw an attack at a Bamako restaurant, and even after that, there was a similar hostage situation at a hotel in Sevare, which was claimed by Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups. And I think it is highly likely that the same group or a group affiliated with them was behind this attack.
All right. Now, what you said international forces are involved here. Beside the Malian troops, who else is taking part in this as far as fighting against these people?
Well, I have seen French and American forces. There's also other European forces. Some of them with the UN peacekeeping MINUSMA have been assisting the Malians in this operation.
Well, Katerina, I thank you very much for being with us. It's a very busy day for you, and thank you for being with us here on International Edition. That is Katerina Hoidja talking to us from Bamako here on International Edition. Now, this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Want to be as anonymous online as possible? One thing British researchers suggest you do is to be very careful selecting your username. Psychologists from the UK's University of York have found that the usernames of those who play online video games can reveal a lot about the actual personalities and even the ages of the individuals themselves. They found players whose username included some kind of profanity or other crude words or phrases were also more inclined to be more antisocial in their gameplay interactions with their online opponents than those with rather benign usernames. On the other hand, they also found that gamers with more positive usernames tended to have positive in-game behavior. The researchers say the data from online video games could provide valuable insight into the players' personalities and possible disorders such as autism or addictive personality. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. Let's get back to our conversation now, stemming from the attack in Mali and a week after attack on the attack in Paris. Jeff Selden, VOA's national security correspondent, is with us. There has to be a whole shift, Jeff, about how the preparation is underway from how it was 5 to 10 years ago. You were preparing, if you are in that business, for some kind of attack from another state, from another country. This is all different, isn't it?
It's very different, and it's very difficult especially for law enforcement officials here in the U.S. because, and you've heard time and time again, former CIA directors, the current CIA director, talk about the case of Edward Snowden, who released a lot of information through WikiLeaks about how the U.S. government was going about collecting information on the people it wanted to track. And they say this has changed the game because a lot of the ways that they used to track information, they used to track the communications of people who were planning to take on these types of attacks. They can't do it anymore. And with these networks growing and growing in areas where they can't be monitored, it becomes very, very difficult to prepare exactly what they're going to do. However, there are a couple of trends. Groups like Al-Qaeda in the past have gone for the big, high-profile, very symbolic targets. For the most part, the Islamic State, while they've done some symbolic targets like attacking Paris, they've been going more for the soft targets, places like the cafes, the restaurants, the concert halls. And so it makes it very difficult. It's always a judgment how much security and how much freedom you give your population in order to prevent another attack.
Jeff Selden is VOA's national security correspondent. As always, Jeff, thanks so much for being with us. This is International Edition.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman. You might have heard that the Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives yesterday voted to suspend President Obama's plan to resettle 10,000 Iraqi and Syrian refugees in the United States over the next year, but he is promising to veto that measure if it does pass the Senate. A strong majority of Republicans joined a sizable group of Obama's Democratic colleagues to impose stricter screening on Iraqis and Syrians entering the country. Joining us on International Edition is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, does yesterday's vote reflect the mood in the United States? Is there that fear? Is there what's going on here?
Yeah, it does to some extent, Ira. Opinion polls show Americans are more concerned now about terrorism. They are more determined to confront the Islamic State, although as a caveat on that, there's also polls that show a very large majority still don't want to commit large numbers of U.S. ground troops in the Middle East as part of this conflict. But yes, we've seen actions of state governors over the past week. We've seen the actions in Congress. We've also seen a very fiery debate in the presidential campaign, and some of those comments are getting a lot of attention and are being denounced, in fact, by members of both parties. I'm talking about Donald Trump talking about creating a database to track Muslims in the United States, yeah, and Ben Carson talking about handling the situation as though you might deal with rabid dogs.
Well, maybe with the exception of Trump, and I don't know whether I should have even injected that, but most of these position statements and ideas are coming after, one would think, conversation with people who are running your campaign. What's the motivation here?
Well, I mean, as we saw earlier with Donald Trump's comments about immigration, there's a very fierce feeling among conservatives in the Republican Party that we need to stop illegal immigration. This is now morphed into concerns about terrorism in the wake of the Paris attacks and the revelations that one of the attackers got through Europe through immigration means. So there's a lot of concern here that anyone trying to come into the United States has to be stopped. That's what we saw in the action in the House yesterday. But Trump has made it a calling card to be very out front on some of these comments. And it's important because in the voting process in the Republican Party, primaries and caucuses, this conservative group within the party has a lot of sway because they get out and vote. And that's where a lot of the candidates are trying to appeal to right now.
So you see this being exacerbated, being intensified as far as some of these anti-immigration stances are concerned?
Well, we've had people like Jeb Bush denounce Trump's comments in the last several hours as abhorrent. Hillary Clinton sent out a tweet saying it was basically not the way to deal with the situation. So it's created a lot of controversy. But whether these controversies somehow have a negative impact on people like Trump and Carson, so far they haven't. And the Republican primary seems to be in kind of its own world. So they've so far seem immune to kind of negative damage from some of what many people would say are outrageous comments.
Well, it is a very long political campaign in this country, as we all know and we've talked about, but at least it stays interesting, doesn't it?
It does.
Jim Malone is VOA's national correspondent. This is International Edition, and this is VOA. Let's turn to music now, shall we? Choreographer-dancer Twyla Tharp is an American icon, this year celebrating her 50th anniversary in the world of dance. She's won a Tony, two Emmys. She's been a Kennedy Center honoree, also a MacArthur Fellow. For her golden anniversary this fall, she's been taking a pair of new works on a 17-city tour. Bill Zeeble has a story from us for us from Dallas, where the tour began.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
In April of 1965, Twyla Tharp, with two colleagues, danced her first work using Petula Clark's popular song, Downtown.
Just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose?
She told the Dallas audience that Tank Dive premiered in New York's Hunter College and lasted all of about 4.5 minutes.
because I figured that's all I knew about a beginning and a middle and an end, and I could get it into that period of time. So if you were late, you kind of missed the whole thing. But that was okay, because I think 14 people came. And that's okay, too.
Because she knew that she could do it. She's since created hundreds of dances over 5 decades, presenting them on the dance stage, Broadway theaters, for television and film. On this anniversary tour, she presents not one, but 2 premieres. Tharp is 74. She does not believe in slowing down.
The point of work is, to me, doing more work. There's always time for the past, and I value the past. Not only my past, but others' past. But the future's got lots of room for the past. The present has only now.
And for now, Tharp says it's time for the world as it ought to be, and for the world as it is. At least according to her. To Bach's well-tempered clavier, Tharp pays tribute to dance giants she learned from: Merce Cunningham, Martha Graham, Jerome Robbins, George Balanchine. Tharp's first work, Preludes and Fugues, presents a world of equality, justice, balance.
People have an overview of tolerance, and that diversity does not separate. It is possible to congregate as a diverse lot. That would be the world as it ought to be. The world as it is had best be approached with humor.
And so the other work, Yowzy, is danced to jazz, with funny interactions between couples and slapstick moves inspired by Tharp's beloved silent film comedies. As she helped pioneer the use of pop, rock, and jazz in serious dance, Tharp also blended modern and classical ballet moves in her work. Tharp is also just really funny. She was a pre-med student before deciding she could learn more about the human body through dance. Other than honorary degrees, she doesn't have a PhD or medical degree, but she says she's a doctor of sorts and pounds the microphone for emphasis.
I do consider myself a doctor, and one of my missions is that when an audience leaves our theater, that audience needs to feel better leaving than it did coming in. And if it doesn't, we haven't done our job.
Twyla Tharp's anniversary prescription to audiences has been these 2 new works and 2 past pieces on a triumphant national tour. For VOA News, I'm Bill Zeeble in Dallas.
And that is going to wrap up our program. Make sure you visit us on our website at voanews.com. I'm Ira Melman. We'll talk to you next time.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Tunisia, where the Arab Spring was born, democratic progress continues. On a recent visit there, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said, "The eyes of the world are on Tunisia, and America wants Tunisia to succeed." Despite great hardships and 2 major terrorist attacks, Tunisia has turned time and again to peaceful dialogue, consensus building, and compromise. As a result, Tunisia has built a powerful front against the Islamic extremists who oppose freedom, democracy, and everything that the Tunisian people are striving to build. The United States is committed to helping Tunisia move forward on its economic, democratic, and security objectives. The United States has already provided more than $700 million in foreign assistance to Tunisia since 2011, in the form of direct aid to democracy building, assistance for elections and civil society organizations, and security support. That's why the United States supports Tunisia's ambitious economic reform agenda. The government has proposed specific reforms, which they have forwarded now to the parliament. In an effort to help Tunisia achieve its goals, the U.S. has signed a declaration of intent, signifying its readiness to grant a 3rd loan guarantee to Tunisia. In order to protect Tunisia's emerging democracy and growing prosperity, it is essential to enhance security cooperation. Toward that end, President Barack Obama recently announced his intent to designate Tunisia a major non-NATO ally. The U.S. will continue to stand with Tunisia in addressing all terrorist threats. Indeed, the United States welcomes Tunisia's decision to join the global counter-ISIL coalition in September. The terrorists associated with ISIL need to know this. Their days are numbered, and they will be defeated. There is no future, no path forward for ISIL, which does not lead ultimately to its destruction. The United States is committed to standing with the Tunisian people, to deepening the growing partnership that both nations share, and to continuing to support Tunisia's democratic journey. That was an editorial.